I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Marielle Nanassi. She is Executive Director of New Energy Economy. Trisha Gallegos is Lead Community Organizer with Juntos New Mexico, which is a project of Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund. And joining us by telephone is Anna Rondon with the Indigenous Uranium Forum. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having us.
Yate, thank you.
So, Marielle Nanassi, we are here today to talk about something that we've talked about on this program before and that has been very much in the news lately, including cover story of last week's Santa Fe Reporter, and that is PNM, the power utility here in New Mexico, is shutting down part of the San Juan coal plant, which is an energy generating plant. They have a plan in front of the PRC, which is the Public Regulation Commission, to replace the power that's lost with more coal power, with nuclear power, with very little solar and no wind energy.
That is correct.
Did I get that all that right?
You got that perfectly correct.
And so there is a hearing to consider whether or not to approve that plan on the 5th of January. Citizens, of course, are welcome between now and the 5th of January to call and write to their PRC commissioners. But what are we looking at? It's sort of like if they're going to just replace coal with coal, why did they shut down part of the coal in the first place?
So what happened is that the EPA said to PNM, you're the owner and operator of the San Juan Generating Station. Now, PNM only owns 46% of that. There's a bunch of other co-owners. EPA targeted the PNM coal plant for a couple of reasons. One is it has caused 60,000 air quality violations, and it was under the regional haze rule under the Clean Air Act. It was polluting the skies at 16 national parks. And so instead of putting on pollution controls, because that's what EPA required of PNM, which is what was in their toolbox. They can't say, hey, you got to shut it down. They could say, hey, you must have what's called best available retrofit technology. And instead of doing that...
Best available retrofit technology means they still burn the coal, but they catch some of the dirt and
yuckers
coming out of the smokestack.
Exactly, the worst pollutants. But I have to just say that New Energy Economy and a number of different organizations all over New Mexico and other places in Colorado and Utah and Arizona, et cetera, because, of course, we really know that there are no borders and that pollution just spills out from New Mexico to Colorado to Arizona.
Right, the four corners.
The four corners.
Yes.
And so what happened was that even though we wanted actually to, we were involved in getting the EPA to regulate PNM, but actually we really didn't want that outcome. What we wanted was the outcome, and I was involved in that, in the settlement negotiation that resulted in the closure of two of the four coal units.
So basically, closing it down was preferable, in your view, to best practices of retrofit technology to catch the pollution before it goes into our lungs.
Exactly. And the reason mostly is because this is a better environmental outcome than putting pollution controls, because those pollution controls wouldn't have dealt with, I'll just say, carbon dioxide emissions,
right.
Wouldn't have dealt with water usage, wouldn't have dealt with coal ash, so things like that. So yes, the answer is yes. And I was so hopeful at that moment because I thought that, oh, it represented this enormous opportunity to shift from a coal-based, which we get 60% of our energy right now from coal, 20% from nuclear.
We in this country?
No, we in New Mexico.
Okay.
When we turn on our light or boot up our computer, 60% of our energy today comes from coal, 20% comes from nuclear, about 14% comes from gas, 5% comes from wind, and about 2% comes from solar. And 2% in the land of the sun, Zia, with our blazing our blazing sunshine here that we have, you know, in abundance. So what happened is that I was so hopeful that this was going to represent this enormous opportunity, because frankly, this is happening all across the country. And there's coal being closed down in everywhere, Nevada and Colorado and Arizona, and they are choosing instead to replace the lost capacity, the energy that we were relying on, with renewables, and especially in the Southwest, with solar and wind, and then gas when those resources are unavailable. But PNM has chosen to replace that power with more coal and nuclear.
It's like a joke.
It's unfortunately a sardonic joke.
So basically, and as we've I think discussed in the past, that energy wouldn't come from burning it at the San Juan energy generating plant, but rather it would be imported from other states?
No, this is what's happened. So at the time when EPA said, okay, look, you have to put on these pollution controls or close it down, California did take advantage of that opportunity. And the California, there are four utilities that were also shareholders in the San Juan plant, a little over 30%. And the California utilities said, you know what? We're out of here. We're done. We don't need this coal plant. We're gonna shift to solar and wind and gas. And what PNM said was, if you get out, how is our partnership agreement going to work? And they couldn't figure out another way to deal with it. So they said, you know what? We'll buy it from New Mexicans. We'll buy your coal shares that are left in units 1 and 4. That's what's remaining. That's what will be remaining in 2018 when the other two units, 2 and 3, are shut down. And we'll just buy it from you. How much is California selling that those shares for? $0, but plus liabilities, which is a big problem. But PNM is turning around and saying, okay, ratepayers, you pay us $26 million for that same amount of coal shares. Now, the other thing that they're doing is PNM owns a percentage share in Palo Verde Nuclear Plant in Arizona. Now, currently, they're losing money on that because it costs them more money to generate that nuclear-powered energy than they can sell it for on the open market. Why? Precisely what we talked about before. Solar, wind, and gas are all cheaper on the open market and have reduced the cost of energy. So PNM is losing money, and they say, not only will we sell you coal from California utilities who are getting out, who are fleeing the San Juan plant, but we're going to sell you from ourselves. We currently own it as a company, but now we're going to sell it to the ratepayers, not at the price that we sell it on the open market, but at 119% more than we sell it for on the open market. And that's their current plan before the PRC.
So let me see if I can recap this. California is getting out of coal. New Mexico is saying, oh, it's not good enough for you, but it's good enough for us.
Well, not New Mexico, but PNM.
PNM.
And that's exactly why we're going to be demonstrating in front of the PRC, because the public needs to tell the PRC, that might be PNM's plan, but that's not New Mexican's plan.
Right. Okay. And meanwhile, they're taking nuclear energy and selling it for more than twice what it's worth on the open market. And because of the way, I mean, this hasn't happened yet. This is what the plan looks like. And because of the fact that they're basically a regional monopoly, we don't really have any other choices.
Well, they still have to get approval by the PRC.
No, I know. But, I mean, if they were to get approval, they can sell it for any amount they want, and we have to pay our bills or the lights get shut off.
Correct.
Okay. All right. We're talking to Marielle Nanasi of New Energy Economy about the proposed plan by PNM to shut down its San Juan coal plant or part of the plant and replace it with more coal. Let's turn to Anna Rondon. She is joining us by phone, and she is with the Indigenous Uranium Forum. Now, you have been looking for a very long time at the questions of how coal mining, coal burning, and uranium mining have, first of all, been happening on and around the Navajo Nation and how they've affected Navajo people. Talk about that for us.
Okay, well, great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Well, since, 1961, it was reported by the National Academy of Sciences that we had the highest mortality rate on the Colorado Plateau. We lived longer. We were one of the most healthiest people in this country until we started getting different companies coming to the Navajo Nation leadership. And so 1962, that's when we started doing the mining of one of the largest coal pit mining catastrophes in this country, along with, since 1940s, we had uranium mining that plagued our reservation, and we're still dealing with that contamination issues. Also, birth outcomes is a very deep concern for us, and our water, our air has been destroyed. As you know, there was a recent NASA photograph that showed that methane cloud above the four corners of the United States.
Right.
And this doesn't really impact not only Navajo people, but all people in this four corners region. We also need to let the public know that back in the 70s, the federal government declared this area as a national sacrifice area, along with South Dakota. And why? It's because this 100-year energy plan was in the making, and it's still.
Now, what does that mean, a national sacrifice area?
That means that all environmental health laws would not be really considered to the full extent of the law, and that's why we have a lot of these battles going on, because the federal government has this plan. And, as you know, the federal government works with the corporations. And since then, we are in a very precarious situation, because it's going to take hundreds, thousands of people to demonstrate at every federal building, at every state office, that we demand clean energy and that we also want our health issues to be addressed, because it's the poor people, the poverty-driven communities, are the ones bearing the brunt of this destruction. And it can't continue.
Well, this whole question of the national sacrifice area, I'd never heard that term until
right.
You just said it. It's basically saying the laws of the land don't apply here. We're
yes.
sacrificing not only land, air, and water, but the people
yes.
who live there. And the people
yes.
are you.
Yes. People of color are mostly the ones carrying that burden, so that everybody can have air conditioning, or electricity for their hair dryers, all the way down in Phoenix, Nevada. A lot of our energy is from our lands. And meanwhile, we have 18,000 homes without electricity.
Right.
It's a deplorable injustice that has been plaguing our people more than 100 years, not only with the subjecting our people to other predatory society mechanisms like a predatory lending. This is predatory injustice on the ratepayers, on the consumers, we that pay the bills, utility bills. Now, all of that is trickling into our health care.
Yeah.
And it's deplorable. Our children deserve better. My grandchildren deserve better.
So let's talk about the birth outcomes. I mean, there's a lot to talk about here, water, air, land, but you mentioned birth. What kind of, and as you said, 75 years ago, Navajo people were some of the healthiest people in the United States on
yes.
the continent.
Yes.
Now you've got something that looks very different. What are you seeing in terms of birth?
Well, based on the Navajo Area Indian Health Service, the chronic diseases, the top three are unintentional injuries, cancer is second. It's the malignant neoplasm is cancer, and heart disease. So all those, we need more studies out there. Every community in New Mexico needs to have a health study. And the community members themselves need to start doing their own health impact assessments, doing their own research at the community level, along with universities or other entities that can help expose the truth on what is happening to our people.
I mean, some studies have been done by various agencies and individuals, groups of people. What are you actually seeing so far? I mean, do you have data on the increase, for example, in rates of cancer, things like that?
Yes, there is data. There are reports out about the rates of cancer and heart disease, which is attributed to uranium exposure and also to, we also have asthma, high rates of asthma in our children and our elders. But putting the pieces of the puzzle together is that we need more on the ground, boots on the ground, moccasins on the ground, of getting door-to-door surveys of what are some of the health problems the families are experiencing. And what is the pathways of these carcinogens that are impacting their health? Is it from the coal mining, or is it from the smokestacks? Is it from being exposed to a uranium mine in your backyard that is has not been reclaimed? There's many, many components looking at this equation of who's responsible. And, it's our governments that are responsible. It's our elected leaders that are responsible.
There was a study by the New York University that just in 2012 that showed that that there's just elevated risks of heart disease, lung disease, and asthma, specifically coming from the San Juan Generating Station. And all the health impacts. They said that there was the equivalent of $60 million worth of externalized health care costs. And for the most concentrated part was are the people who are living literally in the toxic shadow mm-hmm. of PNM San Juan plant.
Yes, so we have the facts. And part of the educational piece is having the community members have access to those studies and more public information. There needs to be more of a better coordination of getting the public health information out to the communities.
So what does that look like right now? I mean, do most Navajo people understand what basically has been done and continues to be done to their health by these kinds of utility projects?
Yes, and there is some information going out on uranium. The Indian Health Service is now getting ready to publish some maps about the uranium exposures, specifically to different regions of the Navajo Nation. But this is long overdue. We have a lot of catching up to do in educating our people. There is a gap between the knowledge, institutional knowledge of uranium mining, and with our young people. There are collaborative efforts happening with grassroots communities, Redwater Pond Road out of Church Rock, New Mexico, who had one of the worst uranium mining accidents in history compared to Chernobyl and Three Mile Island back in 1979. And that still plagues us. We need constant monitoring of our health outcomes in terms of, and even our animals. We're still
right.
told not to purchase livestock from Church Rock. So there's a lot of stories that are out here on Navajo that haven't gone to mainstream yet. We still need organizations to work together. Like with New Energy Economy and other folks, to really look at how we can demand our leadership to listen to the people. Our elected leaders need to listen to the health concerns. You know, our communities are suffering. And, of course, you know, the economy in New Mexico is bleak. We have one of the highest alcoholism rates, DWIs in this in this state. We're lowest, you know, it's why is our educational system so weak? We don't even have a good workforce. So when you look at the plans of the energy czars, we really need to dig deeper into some of these social ills. Are they planned? Are they designed to make us continually suffer and economic blackmail so that we can continue to work for these dirty industries? The time is now to stop.
We're talking to Anna Rondon from the Indigenous Uranium Forum. She's joining us by phone. Now, Trisha Gallegos is working with Juntos New Mexico, which is a project of Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund. And there are some issues that are really parallel to what Anna was just talking about.
Correct. We are, as you said, Juntos New Mexico, and we are part of Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund. And we are actually doing the groundwork for part of this hearing that's coming on. So me with the rest of my team, I have four other community organizers who are doing the actual field work. We're out in the community educating the community in regards to this issue. What's happening with PNM? What's happening with the PRC? We recently delivered over 7,000 letters to the PRC in regards to the hearings so that they could place those as evidence, stating that the community is aware of what's happening and that we are going to continue to fight this fight. And we continue to spend our time meeting with people out in the field, letting them know about the effects of continued coal use, what the advantages are of switching to renewable energy sources in New Mexico, where, as everybody has stated, New Mexico is an abundance of wind and energy, and there's no reason that New Mexico shouldn't take advantage of that opportunity that's here.
Not to mention sun.
Right,
it's exactly. It's a pretty sunny state last
exactly.
time I looked.
Exactly. So, yeah, we spend our time calling community members, and we are actually working mostly in the Latino communities of Albuquerque to uplift and amplify the voice of the community, the Latino community, because of course the Latino and Native American communities are those most affected by what happens here.
Now, what does that look like? What do you mean when you say that?
Of course, communities of color and those of lower economic standing are usually those that suffer the most by the effects of larger corporations.
What does that look like in Albuquerque, for example?
In Albuquerque, that looks like most of the larger corporations and companies, manufacturing plants, are placed in areas in Albuquerque where there are, of course, people of lower economic standing. They're usually placed in those areas that are mostly occupied by people of color.
You know, I think sometimes I just fantasize that there's a law that polluting industries have to be placed next to golf courses. And then you just see what kind of reaction you get.
Exactly.
Or the executives. That's what I would love. I would love for the executives at PNM to have to live within 1 mile of the plant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, yeah. And that's part of our work is Juntos as well, because in Albuquerque, I mean, we're a little bit away from Farmington and the Four Corners area. So people don't make the connection with the regional haze that occurs out there, you know, or what it smells like, what it looks like, what the effects of the ash that's falling, the coal ash. So that's our job. We go around educating people in regards to that issue. We have video. We have pamphlets that we hand out. We know for a fact that 84% of Latinos in New Mexico want to see more clean energy. And of course, as our culture for the Latino and the Native American, we're all very close to the land and very close to, you know, what happens in nature. So we feel that we have an obligation to be stewards to the land and to continue to keep that up. And, you know, continuing to use coal and to destroy our air, our environment, or, you know, our beautiful blue skies here in New Mexico makes no sense.
We're talking to Trisha Gallegos from Juntos New Mexico. Back to Mariel Nanasi from New Energy Economy. Are you proposing an alternative plan? Is there a plan on the table that wouldn't be coal and nuclear that would serve? I mean, basically, I mean, conservation is a huge part of it, and I think we should talk about that at some point, too. But, I mean, you want energy when you turn on your lights.
Correct. I think that, first of all, yes, we do have a plan, and that is to have no new coal and no nuclear. And to have 400 megawatts of wind and 240 megawatts of solar power, which would be an incredible job stimulus in New Mexico, and would be phenomenal for our health.
And that's one of the reasons that your organization is called New Energy Economy, because when you do renewables, you actually are creating a lot more jobs and good jobs than when you're doing, say, coal and nuclear.
That's true. And also, as water is such an important life-giving force in New Mexico, and we have to be conscious of it, solar and wind do not use any water, and coal and nuclear are water hogs.
Let's go back for a moment to Anna Rondon, who is with the Indigenous Uranium Forum. I wanted to ask you how or if you bring local traditional knowledge to considerations of all these issues of health and energy. What is the conversation like about that?
Well, you know, in our teachings, the coal is the liver of Mother Earth. And so the water, she breathes through the coal. And the uranium is our Mother Earth's protection. And when it... We were always told, you know, to leave those in the ground, but, you know, we didn't listen as a Navajo Nation. So the cultural piece is so important because we need to heal from all this. We've been, it's a part of a cultural genocide as well, just as what's going on with other expansion of extractive industries. It just hurts more when we don't have a voice, when our own leaders are not listening. So we do have ceremonies. Every time that we have an event that is in, it's always in a ceremonial fashion. Even the action on January 5th is going to be a ceremonial action because we're bringing together the people to pray. To pray with the cedar that is representative of our wind. We're going to pray with water because water is life. We're going to have singing and drumming on January 5th at the PRC before it starts. And it's always been that way. Even your ancestors, everybody that's on this call, to the first man and to the first woman of humankind. We want to reach back that far for their assistance so they can give us the dreams, the dream visions of what they originally had set out for us as the five-fingered beings of this whole beautiful creation that we have in this universe. And that's the cultural piece that we so much want all people to embrace on January 5th. And that the hearts and the minds of the commissioners will listen, and that they will change their minds and their intent and listen. And if not, we won't stop. We will continue with these prayerful events.
I think it's really important in this discussion to include some questions about how it is that we live and what we use, because I mean, we are, and probably all of us here at this table, like it or not, we are consumers. We have been really taken in by the consumer culture. It's not all bad. There are some good things about it. Brings us certain comforts, brings us together in certain ways. But that consideration of how we live, what we want, and what's important to us, particularly as we come up to this holiday season, Christmas and New Year, and think about what we value. How many gifts do we need or do we need to buy, for example? what are these things made of, where did they come from,
right.
And to bring that kind of awareness to other parts of our lives that are not directly energy policy, a lot of it really does boil, you know, does go back to the to energy policy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and our consumption society. And, you know, we tend to give gifts as opposed to give, you know, share meals and,
right.
You know, and share songs and share, you know, walks and all the things nowadays. And, you know, we live in a consumer society and basically it's breaking our hearts and it's ruining our planet. Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily even making our evenings happier when we're staring at a plasma screen instead of, like, playing
being
cards
together.
And hanging out.
Yeah, and being together and sharing a meal and cooking it together. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've lost our way. There's no question. And we don't really have that long to change our ways. And that's one of the reasons why we're gathering together on the very first day of the hearing in at the Para Building, which is on 1120 Paseo de Peralta, right across the street from the Roundhouse.
Here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, ladies and gentlemen.
On January 5th at 9 a.m., and we have about 35 organizations already who have joined together, Four Corners, Idle No More, and Juntos New Mexico, and New Energy Economy, and Chainbreaker, and San Juan Citizens Alliance, and arts organizations, and solar energy organizations, and 350 New Mexico. So there's, and of course, the Southwest Indigenous Uranium Forum, and there's Center for Civic Policy. I mean, there's been so many, and that's what's really exciting is that this is really a groundswell in New Mexico, all parts of New Mexico, from Navajo Nation to Silver City, and coming together on January 5th at 9 a.m. at the Para Building, right across from the Roundhouse, to demonstrate, to say that we can't afford PNM's plan monetarily, but also climate-wise. And that we, the general, the big, the huge umbrella, we won't stop. And that it's a no to PNM's coal and nuclear plan, and yes to New Mexico solar and wind. And that will be an enormous shift. And that's about climate justice and not having one monopoly control. One monopoly company, Public Service Company of New Mexico, control, because frankly they have not been stewards of this beautiful place that we live, and so we have to make a shift, and we have to take it back, and the people have to take it back.
Yeah.
I'd like to do another shout out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so January 3rd, from 1 o'clock to 5, at the Warehouse 21, will be a talking circle. And then from 6 o'clock to 10, there'll be a concert, music, artists at the Warehouse, 21 Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And that's Saturday night, 2 days before this demonstration at the Para Building in New Mexico.
Yes.
Excellent. And I think it's an interesting when you talk about all the dozens of groups and organizations and people who are coming together for this, it really makes me think about how something, there's kind of an evolution going on in progressive circles, or really just in human circles, which is people are coming together across all kinds of what previously might have been considered boundaries of race, class, location, geography, and everything else.
Right. We have folks coming in from Utah, California, Arizona, showing support.
And Juntos is also, along with the education work we're doing, also having a town hall this evening.
Tonight.
December 16th at the Atrisco Heritage Academy School at 10800 Dennis Chavez in Albuquerque, New Mexico, from 6 to 8. And we will be there. We're going to have a panel talking about the proposal and the hearing and this demonstration that's going to be happening in January. As well, we're there to educate the community as to the effects of continuing to use coal, talking about renewable energy sources, trying to gather public testimony and videotape testimony so that we have all of this for the demonstration and the hearing. We'd love to invite everybody from everywhere, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, to join us at the town hall. And it's located at 10800 Dennis Chavez.
So how can people get in touch with their, besides going to the demonstration, some people can go to that. I'm sure some people can. Some people are working at 9 in the morning. It's the first work day of the new year. How can people make their voices heard? Who needs to hear these voices? Is it the members of the Public Regulation Commission, the PRC?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And so you could go to just the Public Regulation Commission website. You can send them an email. You can write them. You can go to the different organizations, because there's really mobilization all over the state now to weigh in, and whether it's Juntos sending in postcards or sending in a letter or writing a letter to the editor, we really want a groundswell of people saying, you know what, no more coal, no more nuclear. It's like literally killing us. And we have options here in New Mexico, especially given the wealth of our sun.
Yeah.
And
as
our
we've said, yes.
And the wind. I mean, what's really criminal is that Public Service Company of New Mexico has 1% solar in its portfolio. The other 1% are all the individuals and companies who put solar on their buildings. I have solar and it works great and it's amazing, and I love not paying a bill to PNM. As a matter of fact, they pay me. So I mean, this is what's possible, and this is what we need to do as larger communities.
Right. It's almost like it's criminal for them not to put renewables.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's a question I was going to ask you, well, ask all of you, but do you think that the adoption of rooftop solar that individuals are putting on their houses and the decrease in price of solar, I saw that graph once, and it's like a really, really steep ski slope down from the price of what it was 5, 10, 20, 30 mm-hmm. years ago to what it is now, and it's still going down. What role, I mean, it's still a small number of the actual whole of people who have electricity, which is everybody, but is the adoption of rooftop solar affecting the business of PNM, affecting the business model of PNM?
The thing is that right now, the way that PNM's business model is that they have these big, big power plants. The San Juan coal power plant has been operating for 40 years. It is a energy hog. It's also a money hog. And things break, and then they get to charge us more and more and more. And right now, PNM's long-term plan is that that's going to be operational till 2053. More,
oh my God.
Yeah, more and more coal. But we have to take our energy back. And solar is on the rise in New Mexico, but it hasn't been widely adopted as because really the upfront cost for individuals is steep. Ultimately, it pays off in 8 or 10 years. But that's why PNM is so oppositional. They don't know how to keep on making more and more money because they on solar, and so that's why they don't want to adopt it. And that's one of the problems with solar up till today is that mostly wealthy people have had access to it. And what we at New Energy Economy has tried to do is really infiltrate the market, and to, especially with, like, the city of Santa Fe has done a fabulous job. It's not over, but 20% of all the energy used in the city of Santa Fe is through solar. And
we're up to 20 now?
Yeah, and that's saving us Santa Feans money as a whole, because that's how the city generates their electricity.
Yeah.
And it's, of course, better for the environment, and it's also better for our pocketbook. And we don't want to be investing in these huge, big, you know, power plants that keep on breaking and cause global warming pollution.
I mean, I think there's two big pieces of the problem that are coming to mind from what you're saying, Marielle. One of them is that if you really had a totally renewable business model, the amount that you could charge for that would go down. It would probably be more distributed. It would be probably more in the hands of municipalities or individuals or neighborhoods. And so that's a huge, I mean, what's best for society is going to probably be what's worst for the monopoly.
That's correct.
And so they're going to fight you tooth and nail. I mean, that's the problem.
And that's what we see.
And how, like, how do we come together so that we all have the same interests?
Well, one of the things is that we, you know, we think that we have to break the monopoly status that PNM currently holds. And that has been done in 6 states in the United States. And for instance, probably the most progressive one is in Illinois, and 91 cities and towns in Illinois are on 100% renewable energy. That, and the city of Chicago, 900,000 meters, that's double what PNM has on its, in its portfolio. They have no more coal energy.
900,000 electric meters?
Yes. At a stroke of a pen.
What are you talking about? 900,000 electric meters?
So
what does that mean?
What that means is that, you know, you have a meter at your house. I have a meter at my house. PNM has about close to 500,000 meters. Okay. Families basically of three or four. Well, imagine double that nearly in the city of Chicago. And in the stroke of a pen, they said, we're not going to get any of our energy from coal anymore. And so they just eliminated that as a source for 900,000 different families in Chicago, which is remarkable. And that's the direction I think that we need to head in if we're going to make a dent on climate change and basically have a survivable planet.
There's another piece to it, which is that a lot of the kind of progressive, forward-looking models of what our energy future could look like include renewables like wind and solar, and then a kind of backup of natural gas, which still is a greenhouse gas, but it doesn't burn as dirty and it doesn't produce as much pollution as coal. But it is extracted through hydraulic fracturing, which a lot of people are fighting. So it's kind of like, oh, it's part of our energy future, but we don't want the dangers that are attendant to extracting it.
Well, what's so amazing in New Mexico is that we are incredibly blessed with a lot of solar. And actually in New Mexico, we could meet most, and I mean something like 85 to 90% of our energy needs with wind and solar. It's remarkable, actually. There would have to be backup. And that, if first of all, if we could, I mean, right now we're at 1.5% basically percent solar and 5% wind. We have a long way to go. But if we had, and if we only used gas for the time that we couldn't use solar and wind, we would dramatically reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. But at some point, and this is already happening, is that there's battery storage backup now for hours. And there was one story in Germany that they were on renewable energy for 36 straight days, nothing else.
On renewable energy?
Yeah.
Do you mean on batteries?
Or what with battery backup, yep. And so this is happening, and it's very exciting, and we're moving it towards that direction. But we have so far to go. By the time we get to the 90% range, we will have backup storage in one form or another.
In one form or another. Anna Rondon, I wanted to ask you, do you have a vision? Do you have a kind of dream about what the energy future of the Navajo Nation could look like?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to have to be, like you mentioned before, it's going to have to be conservation along with renewable energy, solar on the homes. You know, we have Navajo Housing Authority homes that each of those clusters of homes could have a solar farm. Or this one elder says, I want a solar corral where I can have solar next to my sheep corral, and, you know, a little, he made it sound so cute. So there's so much interest out there with among our elders and young families, young Navajo families. They do want renewable energy. They do want solar. Just think, if every home had a solar system on their home, we could reduce the energy consumption and then also pay into the renewable energy source, meaning our tribal Navajo Tribal Utility Authority is the one that would be paying us back. You know, so there's these different agreements that could be developed. Along with that, and more importantly, is our homes. Our homes need to be built in a way that it's energy efficient. Maybe net zero housing policies should start being made, where they're designed like maybe three feet thick walls, triple pane windows, because the matter of the fact is that we need to start preparing for the future of our climate chaos that is already upon us. The earth has shifted because of the earthquakes back in 2011. A lot of our elders here are saying that the sun does not rise in the same place. In fact, I had Navajo tobacco, traditional tobacco that grows, and it grew, it flowered twice. That's unusual. But anyway, going back to our future of our energy interdependence, it's going to take bold changes in our housing policies and our energy consumption policies. Like Mariel mentioned, we do have to take it back, and we will take it back. And we will educate our children and our grandchildren so that they will have the opportunity to create these sustainable, beautiful trees that are growing apples, having also food sovereignty. We need to go back to how our grandparents lived, but also be conscious and have that collective consciousness so that we can create this beautiful world that is at our fingertips.
Anna Rondon is with the Indigenous Uranium Forum, and you can find out more information at Southwest Research and Information Center, which is on the web at sric.org. And Tricia Gallegos is lead community organizer with Juntos New Mexico, which is a project of Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund. Is there a website that you can send people to?
Yes, actually, Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund has their own website, www.cvnmef.org.
CVNMEF.org. Okay.
And CVNM's, of course, is CVNM.org. Juntos doesn't have a website, but we do have a Facebook page where we keep in touch with the community, and we post upcoming events. And if people want to get in touch with Juntos or work with us, you can contact us through our Facebook page,
which is facebook.com/
JuntosNM.
Mm-hmm, correct. Excellent. And Mariel Nanasi is executive director of New Energy Economy, which is on the web at newenergyeconomy.org. And once again, on the 5th of January at 9 in the morning at the Para Building, which is 1120 Paseo de Peralta here in Santa Fe, there will be a demonstration. People can let their voices be heard. One more thing before we go, Mariel. You're talking about all the many organizations, and here we are talking about Latinos and Navajo people and indigenous people and consumers and people concerned about the environment all over the state of New Mexico who were against this coal and nuclear plan. Who besides PNM themselves is in favor of it?
I don't know. Anybody? No, there are a couple. Unfortunately, the Attorney General has signed on to PNM's plan, and also something called the New Mexico Industrial Energy Consumers. They've also signed on to PNM's plan. So this is disturbing, but I think that the people and the righteousness of our cause will come forth. I just want to say that there are people all over New Mexico who are really outraged that here we have this opportunity to shift our energy policy, and we're just doubling down. And that is criminal, basically.
Mariel Nanasi, Anna Rondon, and Tricia Gallegos, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.